So this morning, from our from the looks of our artwork up here, we are going to kind of continue in this Daniel theme that we started a week ago, and it's going to be a very familiar sermon this morning, a familiar story anyway. If you've got your Bibles, turn on over to Daniel chapter 3. That's where we're going to be just for a moment. But this morning, I just want, and this, by the way, this is a picture, a painting, or really it's more of an illustration from a 12th century Armenian biblical illustrator or manuscript illustrator. His name is Toros Roslin, and that's more of a Spanish kind of an accent on his name, and that's only because I can't replicate an Armenian accent. But Roslin was a, like I said, he's a manuscript illustrator from the 12th century, and he really, he revolutionized the illustration of biblical manuscripts. And I like this painting or this illustration. It's really, it's only about like this big. It's kind of like the Mona Lisa is this big giant work of art, but really when you see it, it's only like this, and this painting is that. And this goes really great with one of my favorite Andrew Harvey quotes about, and Andrew Harvey is he's a modern theologian and really a spiritualist is how I would, he studied at Oxford and studied theology at Oxford and he's, born in India, but studied at Oxford and he's this, he really is not really a preacher or a minister in the term of that we would consider minister. He's more of a minister in the idea of like a Mother Teresa is a minister. Someone who's not just talking about it all the time, but actually lives on the streets of Calcutta with AIDS patients and lepers. That kind of minister. And he's a theologian and a spiritualist in that he writes things like this. If you want a television, you go out and work for it and you buy it. What he means is you don't make it. You don't build one. All of us have TVs. None of us know how they work. Well, maybe Tim probably knows how they work, but we didn't build our television. We went out and bought it. If you want to learn about Aztec pottery, you take a course. You don't build, you don't make it. You don't, go and you discover it. You go take a course. But the relationship with God requires the active and passionate participation of you, yourself. You have to risk it. You have to abandon yourself to do it. You have to leap into the fire. Nobody will do it for you. Nobody can do it for you. And I think that quote by Harvey is summed up in that illustration by Roslin is that, the passion, a relationship with God. And really, that's what we're all here this morning, either seeking or celebrating or discovering or pursuing. We are all here this morning because either we know about or we've heard of or we want to embark upon a relationship with God. If you're here for any other reason, then you've kind of been led astray at some point. If you're here because you feel like that you've been told that by coming to church you're going to get brownie points with the overall big guy upstairs, the man, and that you're going to be okay because, if I don't go, he's going to be angry. Any of that sort of thing, and you've been, as they say, bamboozled. But being here today is about pursuing or continuing or seeking something about a relationship with God. And it takes passionate participation by the individual. You can't just go out and procure it like you can a television, or you can't just learn about it like you can Aztec pottery. You have to actively, passionately participate in this thing. You have to jump into the fire. You got to risk it. This morning I want to talk about real people really living unreal lives. Real people really living unreal lives. Carson, don't look at me like that. Makes me think you're thinking about what I just said. Carson's mulling that one over. I mean, these people, we're going to read about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We're going to read about a bedtime story today. And they were as real as you and I sitting here this morning. They were as real, flesh and blood. They had feelings. They got hot when it was hot. They sweated when it was hot. They shivered when it was cold. They had hunger pains when they woke up in the morning. And they had, and their hair was a mess. And they had bad breath too. They were real people. And when things were going wrong in their life, they were just as scared and neurotic about things as we are. They're real people. And yet in Daniel chapter 3, verses 1 through 12, we read about this decree from the king. And I'm just going to read through the narrative here. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 90 feet high and 9 feet wide and set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He summoned the satraps, the prefects, the governors, advisors, and all the important people, all the king's horses and all the king's men, and to come and the dedication of the image that he had set up. So all of these people and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "This is what you are commanded to do, O peoples, nations of men, every language. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship immediately will be thrown into a blazing furnace." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, the zither, the lyre, the harp, and all kinds of music, all the peoples and nations of men everywhere language, they fell down and worshiped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. At this time, some of the astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said, "King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You've issued this decree, O king, that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold. And whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing fire. But there are some of the Jews whom you have set over the affairs of this kingdom, of this province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold that you have set up." And we know the rest of the story. The king's anger rages, and he has them stoke the fires 7 times. They throw them all in, and the people who were throwing them in, they got burned up, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out unscathed. We know the story. But do we live that story? Remember last week I asked, is our life an adventure? But do we live that? Do we? But that was then, Shane. I mean, and I know, and I've heard the, and I've lived the excuses, and I've said them, and I've listened to them in Bible studies, and when I'm challenging people, and when we're talking about living a life that God's called us to live, and going against the grain, and all of those cliches that we talk about in church, but Shane, that was then. It was a different time then. I know they were burning people then. They're not so much doing that anymore. Yeah, but Shane, there was this image of gold, and you know, and I'm never called on to worship an image of gold. And whenever I hear a big commotion, a clamoring, or whatever, no one's telling me to drop everything and run and worship an image of gold. And I would say you're kind of right, but really, we don't have to have this big clamoring of music for us to drop everything and run to gold in order to place our lives before it. You see, because this morning, like other Sunday morning, and worship is about discovering this relationship with God. It's about setting aside time to recognize the permanent, eternal presence of God. And this morning, there were some who struggled with that. But come tomorrow morning, we will drop everything and clamor to go lay our lives at the altar that promises us this image of gold. And if we don't go there and do that and do whatever it takes to honor the image of gold, then we too will be thrown into the fiery furnace of whatever it is that drives us, that fire inside, that lack that burns, that drives us to lay our lives at that image of gold. But it was a different time, Shane. It was a different time back then. We don't live in those times. I know we don't. Because they were willing to be burned alive to the glory of God. And yet, it's a struggle for us at times to live comfortably and have the least bit of discomfort in order to put ourselves in a position where God be glorified. They were willing to burn alive in order to participate in a relationship with God. And I think that that's why we're so often frustrated with other faith groups. I think that's really, on some level, that's our beef with the Muslims. Do you want to know why? I really believe that on some level, those who are practicing radical Islam, that's part of our beef with them, because they're willing to give their lives for a lie. And we won't risk discomfort for the truth. I think that's our beef with them. We know that what they are dying and killing for is a lie. And we also know that what we believe is the truth has a hard time. It drives them into buildings with bombs strapped on their chest, and the truth barely drives us out of the bed on a Sunday morning. People can passionately participate in a relationship with God anytime. Whether it was times back then, times now, whether they're burning people alive, whether we're comfortable, whatever, weak people can passionately participate. Those people were no different than we can be. You know, they were biblical characters, yes, but they're no different than we can be. As we've heard it said, they would just happen to be standing around when the Bible got wrote. What would it look like if we happened to be standing around? But see, there's difficulties to consider when it comes to passionately pursuing this relationship. There's difficulties that you and I will have to look into. If we say, yes, I want to passionately pursue a relationship with God. I want to risk it, to be involved. I don't want to just procure it or read about it. I want to be in it. I want to be living it. I want to have that adventure, but there's problems involved. Passionate participation with God brings heat. I mean, let's just, you know, Jesus said, if you're going to do something, you might want to plan on it and count the cost and all those things, because it would be worse off for you to get started and realize, I don't really want to do that, and then quit. So let's just look at the difficulties that are involved in this so that we can make a more informed decision on whether or not we even want to passionately pursue participation with God. First of all, it brings heat. In verse 6, we see, look, there's going to be this fire that's established for those who will live against what the world and against what the flesh and the earthly desires say we are to live. He said, look, throw them in the furnace. It's a lot like what Romans 12 and Galatians 1 and 10 and Matthew 6, 13 through 14 talk about. In Romans chapter 12, it says, look, present your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing unto God. This is your spiritual act of worship. And then you'll know what his good, perfect, and pleasing will. He says, look, the life that God's calling us to live, it's self-sacrificial. He's saying, look, lay your lives on the altar. It's not going to be always this pleasant experience. And that's not because God said, you know what, how can I make this really, really difficult on people? I mean, God didn't sit around and say, you know, like the makers, you know, the writers of like the SAT, and they said, you know, how can we trick people into doing poorly at this? You know, it's not like there's a catch to it. The reason that it's difficult is because there is this force of evil that is out making it difficult for us. You see, life in the garden was fine and dandy until Satan came along and started casting seeds of doubt. I mean, if we believe the creation story, then life was fine. God said, eat what you want, do what you want, walk around naked. Everybody's having a great time. But there's this tree over here. Leave it alone. And from what I can read, they're like, cool. All this we can eat. No clothes. I like this place. It's great. And they never gave that tree another thought. Until Satan came along. Until evil came along and said, hey, you thought about that tree over there? What do you think? Well, God said, well, I don't care what God said. God really did. I mean, he just turned the whole thing around and it made it hard. Now things are difficult. Well, all of a sudden now I'm thinking about something that I wasn't thinking about before. All of a sudden now I'm tempted with something I wasn't tempted with before. All of a sudden God, life got hard now. I've got a choice. I've got a decision. I've got me versus God. I've got, all of a sudden it got really tough. Have you ever had those days where all of a sudden life got really tough all of a sudden and now I've got a choice that I didn't really have just 2 minutes ago? Now I'm thinking about something that was there all along, but I wasn't concerned with it. That's why it's hard. He says, look, now things have gotten difficult because all of these choices and all these decisions and this you versus God situation has come up. So now it's tough. So it's a sacrifice. It's an altar situation. It's a heat thing. He says, look, if you want a relationship with God, it's not whether you want to be good or bad or if you really, if you've got willpower or not. If you want a relationship with God, then passionately pursue it. But there's going to be heat involved. Passion and participation with God, it raises red flags. Red flags just go up everywhere. You start living, start passionately pursuing God in all things and being in a relationship with Him. What happens is the more that you pursue God, the more that you know God, the more that you sing about and study about and pray to and experience God, the more that you love Him. And the problem with that is it's just like it's just like your husband or wife. The more that you get to know them, the more you love them. The more you love them, the more you think about them. And the more you think about them, the more you want to do for them. And you find out, then all these pesky things start happening. Like, she'll just say something. Bob, I know this happens to you all the time. Lisa will just happen to say, well, I like that. Isn't that cool? You just be walking in a store, just going down Florida, lollygagging, and she'll just say, well, isn't that a cute little whatever that is? And she won't think another thing of it. And now Bob's mind, oh, how can I get that for her? How can I? And Lisa's like, yeah, you do that, don't you? I mean, all these pesky little things start happening, like these little hints are dropped. And then you think, well, 6 months later, he's online. What's going to show up at the house? Whatever that thing was. She hadn't thought, and it consumes your time. It consumes a little bit of money. It consumes a little bit of thought. And then you just come in, just, woo, look what I got for you. Because the more you love them, the more you want to do for them. And it wasn't even a requirement, was it? It wasn't even a, you better get me this. Al's done it. Gail said something just in passing. I know it. Next thing you know, he's spending 3 months looking into it. Couple of hours on the internet finding it, sending people on errands. Blair, go pick this up because we're putting this together for Miss Gail because I love her. She didn't really ask for it. She's not requiring it. If I don't do it, it's not like she's going to kick me out of the house. But I love her, so I'll do it, and it just takes over my life. God's a lot like that. If we'll get to know Him, if we'll pursue Him, we'll say, hey, and then somebody will come along and say, hey, why don't you be mean to Miss Gail? Why don't you just really do something evil behind Lisa's back? And no, I wouldn't. I'm not doing that. Well, there's fire if you don't. Throw me in the fire because my love for them is greater than any fire you could stoke. I'll gladly take it. See, that's love. That's a passionate pursuit. But it raises red flags. Wait a second. You aren't living. Look at verse 8 through 13. You're not doing like everybody else. You're not controlled by what you're supposed to be controlled by. Look at what everyone else, and all these red flags start going up. Why are you doing that? And don't you care? Aren't you, can you not see this logically? John chapter 3 and chapter 19, or chapter 3 verse 19. Jesus says, this is what's going to happen. There will be red flags. There will be attention brought to you because of this. Not only is there heat involved, but there's going to be, people are going to look for ways to poke holes in what you're doing. And he says, look, Red flags will cause anyone to question their logic. Oh, don't you know how it's supposed to be? Look at everyone else. Look at society. You just can't be in a relationship with God that looks like this. It just doesn't make sense. God wouldn't make you to live a life like that. Life's too short. Life's too short to be miserable all the time. I mean, you don't need to stay in that relationship. You don't need to change for that person. You don't need to deny yourself. It's just too short. Red flags don't be logical. I mean, God doesn't expect you to take care and help and to spend and all that. I mean, think of the heat. Think of the lack you're going to feel if you give to this cause and you help that person, if you invite this one into your home, or if you're seen with those folks, or if you, I mean, think of that. And I mean, come on, be logical here, people. We don't want to throw you in the fire, but we'll have to. And it raises these red flags, and it's like, well, maybe it is okay for him. Maybe I don't need to do this. The last thing is that passionate participation with God brings about a boldness. And in verses 16 through 18, you guys have heard it. Even if I'm not preaching about Daniel, even if I'm not preaching about Jonathan, I love these quotes. It says, look, our God is able, but even if he doesn't, I'm going to be bold. I'm going to give. And the Bible says that if I give, that God will give back. But you know the crazy thing is that it might not be money that he gives back to me. So I might give away everything I've got and then be poor. And I'm just bold enough to be poor for the glory of God. You know, God, he says if I do this, then he's going to do that. But maybe it's a spiritual blessing. It's not a physical blessing. Maybe it's a reward that's not really here, but it's a reward that's there and it's inside of me. You know, maybe it's not always maybe the boldness that God is calling us to have is this boldness that's against the grain and it's contrary to the logic. And it doesn't matter if what comes around goes around. What if what goes around never comes back and I'm still happy about that and I'm praising God? Man, that's bold. I mean, that's ugly bold. I mean, that's in your face, world. That's what that is. And they said, look, God, you know, and it's in Acts chapter 4 and 29, Peter and the other apostles, they pray for boldness. They're like, God, there's some heat, there's this fiery furnace, there's all these red flags. And they knew that within themselves was the greatest enemy. They said, God, give us boldness. Give us boldness to say Jesus is Lord, even if they tell us they're going to kill us for saying Jesus is Lord. Put that on our lips. Make us bold. And the results of this participation, it's uncommon. I mean, it's so uncommon. It just doesn't happen. That's why Jesus said in Matthew 13, he said, look, wide is the gate that leads to nothingness. Narrow is the way that leads to this adventure. He said, wide and broad and populated is the path that is just like everyone else, that's just falling on their knees every time the gold comes around, just falling. Every time the earth moves, the wind blows, it's just, what do you want us to do, world? But the narrow is this way that's adventurous, that's fiery, that's rocky. That's got swords and spears thrown at you and people talking about you behind your back and friends betraying you and family members saying you're crazy and people saying, well, that's just not how the world works and you're stupid for being taken advantage of and don't you know that you're naive and da 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 on and on and on. But man, what a life that is. How are we going to pay the bills? I don't know. We gave everything away. How are we going to get from here to that? How are we going to do that? I don't know. We're forced to trust. I've got one more quote for you when it comes to our picture of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fire. Red flags and all. Just passionately pursuing God no matter where it leads. Is that only in passionate participation with God does real life have the possibility of becoming unreal. I mean, some of the greatest times in my life, we look back and go, man, that was unreal. I mean, that was just, I couldn't believe we were doing that. When we're in the middle of it and thinking, that was just unreal. It was like out of body experience. God's calling us to this out of body experience, where, like Paul said, what happens to the body is not really my concern, because there's this eternal body that I long to be in. I long to be in. And maybe just maybe, we spend less time putting out fires and more time walking into them. Maybe we spend less time trying to smooth the waters of the world and more time jumping out of boats into the storm. Because you know what they experienced in that fire? They experienced Jesus. The three people go in, they look in there, and there's four people in there. They experienced Jesus. Remember Peter getting out of the boat on the storm, when the waves and the crashing, and Jesus comes walking on water. Peter said, "Bid me to come to you," and he did. And it was stormy out there. It was a little windy out there. Remember that sermon? Guess what? Jesus was out there. One out of 12 people that day got to walk on water because Jesus was in the storm, and Peter was the only one willing to get his feet wet. Let's not put out fires. Let's run headlong into them. Don't rock the boat. Jump out of the boat and live an unreal life. This morning, do you want to start that life? Do you want to take God up on His offer to have a passionate pursuit of Him that is a relationship with God that's exciting and terrifying and ridiculous and unreal and all of those things rolled into one? Do you want that life? It's not for everyone. Some people say, "No, I really don't." Okay, I can't. Okay. Stop. You're not rejecting me, it's God. But if you want that life, it's available. Confess Christ. Be baptized. Face the fire. You know, red flags be gone. God, I will passionately pursue you. It's not following the rules. It's a passionate pursuit of God and falling in love with Him and just seeing where the emotion of love, the choice of love takes you when it comes to God. Whatever your need is, whatever your desire is, let us know. Come forward. Talk to me. Let's pray about it. It's together we stand and as we sing.